Hall that the sympathetic resonance blew them across the room. Carding ended up on his back, his hat over his eyes. They hauled him out and dusted him off and carried him to Coyne and the staff amid cheers, although some of the older wizards forbore to cheer, but he didn't seem to pay any attention. He stared sightlessly down at the boy and then slowly raised his hands to his ears.
"Can't you hear them?" he said.
The wizards fell silent. Carding still had power, and the tone of his voice would have quelled a thunderstorm. Coyne's eyes glowed.
"I hear nothing," he said.
Carding turned to the rest of the wizards.
"Can't you hear them?"
They shook their heads. One of them said,
"Hear what, brother?"
Carding smiled, and it was a wide, mad smile. Even Coyne took a step backwards.
"You'll hear them soon enough," he said. "You've made a beacon. You'll all hear them. But you won't hear them for long."
He pushed aside the younger wizards who were holding his arms and advanced on Coyne.
"You're pouring sorcery into the world and other things are coming with it," he said. "Others have given them a pathway, but you've given them an avenue."
He sprang forwards and snatched the black staff out of Coyne's hands and swung it up in the air to smash it against the wall. Carding went rigid as the staff struck back. Then his skin began to blister. Most of the wizards managed to turn their heads away. A few, and there are always a few like that, watched in obscene fascination. Coyne watched too. His eyes widened in wonder. One hand went to his mouth. He tried to back away. He couldn't.
"There, Cumulus."
"Oh, marvellous," said Nigel weakly.
"Weight doesn't come into it. My steed has carried armies, my steed has carried cities, yea, he hath carried all things in their due time,"
said Death.
"But he's not going to carry you three."
"Why not?"
"It's a matter of the look of the thing."
"It's going to look pretty good then, isn't it?" said War testily. "The one horseman and the three pedestrians of the apocalypse."
"Perhaps you could ask them to wait for us,"
said Pestilence, his voice sounding like something dripping out of the bottom of a coffin.
"I have things to attend to,"
said Death. He made a little clicking noise with his teeth.
"I'm sure you'll manage. You normally do."
War watched the retreating horse.
"Sometimes he really gets on my nerves. Why is he always so keen to have the last word?" he said.
"Horse of habit, I suppose."
They turned back to the tavern. Neither spoke for some time, and then War said,
"Where's Famine?"
"Went to find the kitchen."
"Oh."
War scuffed one armoured foot in the dust and thought about the distance to Ankh. It was a very hot afternoon. The apocalypse could jolly well wait.
"One for the road," he suggested.
"Should we?"
said Pestilence doubtfully.
"I thought we were expected. I mean, I wouldn't like to disappoint people."
"We've got time for a quick one, I'm sure," War insisted. "Pub clocks are never right. We've got bags of time. All the time in the world."
Carding slumped forward and thudded on the shining white floor. The staff rolled out of his hands and upended itself. Coyne prodded the limp body with his foot.
"I did warn him," he said. "I told him what would happen if he touched it again. What did he mean, them?"
There was an outbreak of coughing and a considerable inspection of fingernails.
"What did he mean?"
Coyne demanded. Ovin Harkardly, lecturer in law, once again found that the wizards around him were parting like morning mist. Without moving, he appeared to have stepped forward. His eyes swiveled backwards and forwards like trapped animals.
"Ah," he said. He waved his thin hands vaguely.
"The world, you see, that is, the reality in which we live, in fact, it can be thought of as, in a manner of speaking, a rubber sheet."
He hesitated, aware that the sentence was not going to appear in anyone's book of quotable quotes.
"In that," he added hurriedly, "it is distorted, distended by the presence of magic in any degree, and if I may make a point here, too much magical potentiality.
if foregathered in one spot, forces our reality downwards. Although, of course, one should not take the term literally, because in no sense do I seek to suggest a physical dimension, and it has been postulated that a sufficient exercise of magic can, shall we say, break through the actuality at its lowest point and offer, perhaps, a pathway to the inhabitants, or if I may use a more correct term, denizens of the lower plane, which is called by the loose-tongued the dungeon dimensions, who, because perhaps of the difference in energy levels, are naturally attracted to the brightness of this world. Our world. There was the typical long pause which usually followed Harkardly's speeches, while everybody mentally inserted commas and stitched the fractured clauses together. Coin's lips moved silently for a while. "Do you mean magic attracts these creatures?" he said eventually. His voice was quite different now. It lacked its former edge. The staff hung in the air above the prone body of Carding, rotating slowly. The eyes of every wizard in the place were on it.
"So it appears," said Harkardly. "Students of such things say their presence is heralded by a coarse susurration."
Coin looked uncertain.
"They buzz," said one of the other wizards helpfully.
The boy knelt down and peered closely at Carding.
"He's very still," he said curiously. "Is anything bad happening to him?"
"It may be," said Harkardly guardedly. "He's dead."
"I wish he wasn't."
"It is a view, I suspect, which he shares."
"But I can help him," said Coin. He held out his hands, and the staff glided into them. If it had a face, it would have smirked. When he spoke next, his voice once again had the cold, distant tones of someone speaking in a steel room.
"If failure had no penalty, success would not be a prize," he said.
"Sorry," said Harkardly,
"you've lost me there."
Coin turned on his heel and strode back to his chair.
"We can fear nothing," he said,
and it sounded more like a command.
"What of these dungeon dimensions? If they should trouble us, away with them. A true wizard will fear nothing. Nothing."
He jerked to his feet again and strode to the simulacrum of the world. The image was perfect in every detail, down to a ghost of great Artuin paddling slowly through the interstellar deeps a few inches above the floor. Coin waved his hand through it all disdainfully.
"Ours is a world of magic," he said, "and what can be found in it that can stand against us?"
Harkardly thought that something was expected of him.
"Absolutely no one," he said, "except for the gods, of course."
There was dead silence.
"The gods?" said Coin quietly.
"Well, yes, certainly. We don't challenge the gods. They do their job, we do ours. No sense in..." "Who rules the disc, wizards or gods?"
Harkardly thought quickly.
"Oh, the wizards, of course, but as it were, under the gods."
End of CD 6.